Well, good morning. Thanks for coming to our presentation this morning. My name is Corey Gerber, and I'm going to be speaking along with my colleague Aaron Patton on how to possibly utilize the Weed Gardens for education. So now, how many of you, raise your hand, have you ever had the experience to establish or maintain a weed or crop garden? Okay, so you know how difficult it is, and it's the time constraints and everything, it's very difficult. And so, you know, even though we see those difficulties, often, you know, there's a lot of benefits to come from that. And so a few of the key ones, I think the first one is hands-on. And a lot of us in extension, we know that the hands-on training is very, very important. People can go out to these gardens, they can touch the plants, they can feel them, they can smell them, when they visually see them, just like the video. When you visually see things, you can take it with you, you learn, go to the field, and it really enhances their experiences as they can make decisions on weed management in the field. The second thing we put up there were students. Our centers are close enough to our the university that students can come out if they have classes. They can go through the gardens and experience those actually in the field. Greenhouses are good, but when the plants are actually in the environment, a lot of times it shows what they naturally look like. And so students can do that, as well as they can go through and prepare for different weed exams or crop exams. And so we have a lot of students that will come and do that as well. And finally, the last one I think are for photos. We have the plants out there, they're identified, and you can take photos of all different stages of the plant, take those photos, put those into publications or presentations, and so it's really a really good way to enhance your education that way. Now, I am in charge of the Crop Diagnostic Training Center at Purdue University. We're located on the grounds of the Agronomy Center for Research and Education in West Lafayette. And we're often known as the place for infield hands-on training for field crop issues. Well, one of those issues, obviously, is weed and weed management. Now, the program has been in place for about 30 years. I have not been there that long. But when they first started the program, as you can see here in this little gold box, they started with about a tenth of a hectare. Okay, so a very small area that they want to start this this weed garden. And primarily, they're looking at Indiana weeds just to train the farmers from Indiana. And so what they decided to do was they took these tile pipes, which were, the diameter is about 50 centimeters, so very large. They would cut them about 125 centimeters, so we're looking at very big tubes. All right, they'd take their backhoe with an auger, drill down pretty deep, they'd sink these in the ground, and then they'd backfill in. And you can kind of see the final product right here. Okay, the idea behind that was to prevent any other weeds coming up from underneath, maybe the rings or coming over the top, etc. And so you wouldn't have to weed. They thought it'd be a weed-free weed garden, right? Well, just kind of show you, here was the final product. I came on the program about 13 years ago. They had 70 weeds in the garden. And here you can see some training going on. A couple things I found out. One, I really wanted to expand our weed garden. Okay, I thought 70 wasn't enough, and I wanted to get a little larger. So I learned about the history of the installation, and I thought, you know what? If I'm going to expand, I don't want to do all that work. That's a lot of work. Plus, what I found out was with our students, okay, I became the bad guy. Because every spring we go out there, and I tell the students, we have to weed our weed garden. They look at me odd, and I'm like, yes, we got to go to the weed garden. So they'd go out, they'd do it one time, and I thought, oh, we're glad that's done. We never have to do it again. Nope, you had to do it once a week. Okay, so again, they did not like that, but I realized that the depth and the size of what they were putting these rings in did not make a lot of sense. Okay, plus, those things cost a lot of money. So probably for about, I think it's about $22 for 1 foot of those tiles is a lot of money. And so I kind of changed the insulation process. So what we ended up doing is we actually used roughly about 15 centimeters is all we cut it at. Okay, and you can see the installation process here with lining them up, kind of marking things, removing the turf, and then kind of backfilling with that same soil, installation of the rings, and then at the end you get your final product. Okay. So right now, again, you can kind of see where our gardens look like now. We actually are about a half a hectare at the farm. We have 350 different weed species. Of those weed species, probably 98 to 99, depends upon the what the weather looks like in through the winter, come back the next year. Okay, so we don't lose very many weeds. There's a few of the southern weeds that we have in our gardens that we have to dig up and transplant, take to the greenhouse and keep them alive for the winter, then come back the next spring and plant them. So there's a lot of good comeback from those different weeds. Now, with that being said, kind of the impact on what we're seeing, here's just one section of our garden. This one has 175 weed species there. In 2015, we trained 515 people that came through our program. These were paying customers, okay, to get a lot of their interns and the people within their company to understand what these weeds look like, et cetera. And so that's quite a few people we had. Now, beyond that, with the students, and we have people coming to the farm during the evenings or on weekends. It's public access, and they kind of utilize our gardens for that. We average about 1,000 people a year that come through our gardens to just kind of get some education and just get a background on these weed species. So it's been very effective, and again, this is kind of the agronomic side of things. I'm going to turn it over to Aaron right now, and he's going to focus on the turf wheat garden.
So when I first started at Purdue about 5 years ago, I was inspired by Corey's weed garden, so I started thinking initially I was going to do it just like Corey did, and I quickly realized I didn't have enough land to put a turf weed garden out of our turf research center using Corey's methods. So I started to look into what are some other ways that we might be able to do a weed garden on a slightly smaller scale. And you can see here some different pictures from around the country, some other ways to do a weed garden. And ultimately, I got kind of inspired in talking with our landscape specialists and in the method that we ultimately chose. So we're looking for a way that could be on a smaller scale, okay, so it didn't take up much space. But I also wanted the ability to reorganize the weeds if I felt that I wanted to reorganize them, if I wanted to put them in order of flower color or family or alphabetical order or life cycle. I wanted the ability to change my mind essentially in how I had the weeds arranged. And so I was looking for a way to do that, and again, in a way that took up less space but still allowed people to walk through the weed garden. So I got to thinking about the system that they use in nurseries called a pot and pot system. And the idea there is instead of doing the ball and burlap is they grow a plant in the pot and then it fits inside of another pot that's seeded in the ground. And they seed the second pot in the ground for a couple reasons. One, it provides stability so that tree won't, or that shrub will not get blown over. And then with that pot set in the ground as well, it helps to keep the root system cool and to conserve some moisture. So I wondered if this might work for us in our turf grass system. And it would give us flexibility to move plants around because that's what they do in a nursery. As they sell a plant, then they can come right back in there and put a new plant in its place. So the simplest way to do a pot and pot is to essentially get two pots of the same size. You plant one pot in the ground, you put a brick in the bottom of that pot, and then you set the second pot in there. And you put the brick in there so the two pots don't wedge so tight together that you can't ever separate them. And so the advantage for us is it allows us to easily pull that top pot that contains the weed out of the ground and move it around. We can bring it into the classroom and use it for demonstration, or if we have a field day stop, we can move it out for that stop. It also allows us, like Corey said, you got to bring some weeds in the greenhouse in the wintertime so they won't winter kill. So this makes it easy for us. We just pull those pots out of the ground and bring them into the greenhouse so they won't winter kill. And then again, it achieves my objective, which was that I wanted to be able to move these around a little bit and rearrange them from time to time, season to season. So we're blessed that our Turfgrass Research Center, we have a classroom in that building back there. And so we decided just to build our weed garden right behind the classroom so that whether we're teaching an extension audience or a group of students on campus, that we can just bring them right outside the back door there and look around at this weed garden. So this was the facility we're going to put it in at. This is essentially my layout. We got six rows of the weeds, and then it's designed so that there are some larger walkways or alleyways in between the sets of pots. So we went with this pot and pot design. We used and it's really interesting how they size pots in the greenhouse industry. But we had either a number 6 or a number 7, depending on how you measure it. Pot. These were pretty thick plastic, so they weren't the flimsy plastic pots, but a real thick, durable plastic that we actually just purchased used from a nursery that we had not too far up the road. We ended up filling our pots with potting soil initially because I just didn't want to take all the time to autoclave a bunch of field soil. I was concerned, of course, about contamination, and so we just used some garden potting soil that you could pick up from any hardware store or we collected our weeds locally there and transplanted them right in the pots. So the other thing we wanted to do is I wanted to make sure that we were doing a good job educating the people that came to our weed garden about the weeds. And so every weed has a sign that's on a metal nursery stake, just like Corey has in his weed garden, but we just added some information to ours. So we've got the common and scientific name of the weed, its life cycle and when it germinates, some identifying characteristics. We have a little icon down here that tells you where in the state of Indiana you would find that weed. In this case, you'd find it throughout the whole state. Pictures of the weeds. So for most weeds, we would have a picture of the weed and then a picture of the flower. In this case, since it's a grass, we have a picture of the oracle because that's helpful for the identification of this particular grass. And then we have down here at the bottom a similar species listed so that the person will know that, hey, I might have this annual ryegrass, but I could have this quackgrass, and so they can go in the weed garden there and find the quackgrass and then decide ultimately which weed they have. So this is what our turf weed garden looks like. Obviously, with it being a turf weed garden, where it's populated mostly with weeds that we would find in a turf or a landscape setting. There's enough room for 120 weeds out there, and we do have some blanks out there. By the way, we have about 110 different weeds in our weed garden currently. So you can see the signs are arranged in such a way so that when you're walking through these alleys, the education sign is facing the large alley, and those two pots are back-to-back there. It's been real successful for us initially. We've had this in the field for a couple of years now, so anytime we have a field day or any kind of other extension event on campus, we bring folks out there. We spend, usually just give them some time to wander around and look at things, and then we'll often have some pointed discussion maybe about a couple weeds that are problematic that time of year or a couple weeds that we feel like we've been doing some research on recently or maybe some weeds that are commonly misidentified. So we'll change the focus from time to time. Here you can see we've got Dr. Beck, who's the other author on this paper. She's wandering around the weed garden when people are looking at it, and she finds three individuals looking at this weed. So she's spends some time talking a little bit more specifically about that weed to these individuals. Now this picture was taken at our field day, which is our biggest event of the year at that location, and obviously it's too small for that number of people. But when we have other events out there where, with smaller groups, then it's still a pretty good size for us. So even though it is smaller and more condensed, most of the time we find that still works okay for us. So a couple things that we didn't expect, just how abundantly self-seeding some of the weeds are. So you actually have to go in and thin some pots out in order for the weeds to develop and look like they would out in the field. Like Corey said, you got to spend a lot of time weeding the weed garden. And so that's labor intensive, but also teaches students how to identify seedlings very well because they have to learn to what the seedlings look like. Our potting soil, whether it was good because it didn't have any weed seed in it, but it was bad because it actually dried out. Originally, I thought, well, we're putting a weed garden in, we won't ever have to irrigate it. These are weeds, right? But we do have to irrigate our weed garden to keep our weeds looking halfway decent. And it's a great opportunity to collect seed as well if you're interested in collecting some seed for other things. And the last point here is that people are even worse at weed ID than I thought. And my thoughts on this after doing this for several years is that people know how to identify 10 to 15 weeds, and beyond that, they're pretty clueless. And so that gives them an opportunity to teach them some other weeds that they're not normally good at. So it's a valuable tool for us for hands-on extension education. Provides quick feedback for you on which weeds are people are quick misidentifying or having trouble controlling. We've had a lot of good positive feedback so far. But we haven't taken on the task of measuring the weed identification ability of specific individuals and then using the weed garden to see how their identification skills might improve over time. So I haven't studied it in that fashion yet. The other thing I'd encourage you to do is to take some of your weeds on the road. And so what we do with some of that seed that we collect throughout the years is we'll plant them in smaller pots in the greenhouse, and then we have some events in the winter months. I just throw them in some Rubbermaid totes, and we'll take them on the road and teach people weed identification on the road. And we've had some good feedback from not just the attendees, but some of our colleagues in industry, which is always nice. So with that, if we have any time, Olga, maybe take a question or two about our weed garden.
We have time at this time, but thank you.
Okay, thank you.